racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And good evening once again, and welcome to another edition of Inside Motorsport. I'm Colin Ford, and of course, Craig Revell over the other side of the panel, working like crazy with the buttons. Peter Norton, unfortunately, away this week. He's not able to join us, probably looking after fatherly duties with the young Matthew, the new member. Actually, I actually got to see yesterday, a beautiful boy he is too. That sort of age where they just look up at you and they just look at you, and that's all they can really do.
Mm. So anyhow. Two out of three on the panel, all with new kids.
And wear motorsport shirts. We won't let you get away with that one again.
That's it.
Yeah, but anyhow, now we've got a good week's motorsport this week. And, of course, things are happening over in New Zealand currently. As we say, the season really never finishes these days. And this weekend it's been over in New Zealand, once again with the Formula Holden guys running in the second leg of the Tasman Cup. I think it was the New Zealand Grand Prix. The other week it was Denny Holm Trophy. And we cross over to Brenton Ramsey in New Zealand for our report on that.
Yeah, Andy Booth is very, very happy after today's occurrences, that's for sure. He's taken the win in the Grand Prix, and back-to-back with his Denny Holm Memorial Trophy. They're the two biggest prizes in New Zealand as far as motorsport goes at the moment, and the NRC team are rubbing their hands together with glee.
Well, Matthew Halliday finishing in a second position also makes up for the disappointment of him not making the trophy race last weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Matthew had actually had a little bit of trouble with his car earlier in the sessions here at Pukekohe, but today's car was definitely on song. And towards the second part of the Grand Prix today, Halliday was actually catching Booth, and it looked like there was going to be a real battle. With 10 laps to go, Halliday was picking him off at about 4 tenths of a second a lap, but then they came across some back markers, and Matty was a little bit early on the throttle, I think, and he rotated the car over in the Castrol part of the circuit, and ended up dropping back, but he recovered to finish second.
Now, for the people that haven't seen the course, evidently it is just an absolute speed bowl.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very fast. And they're getting top speeds of around 260 kilometres an hour. And it definitely takes its toll. I mean, watching the drivers come down the start-finish straight, for example, Emerson Newton-John, the American driver, the Malibu-based driver, his head was bobbling all over the place as he came down the straight. But the drivers... you know, the safety car was really the issue that caught them off guard, and it resulted in, you know, a change of leader and all sorts of things happening.
Right, sounds like a very exciting race. How was it as a spectacle for you who weren't sitting in the driver's seat enjoying it up from the grandstand?
Well, I was up in the commentary with Chris Jewell, and we had the best view in the house there, and you can get quite a good view of virtually the whole track as they run down the back part of the circuit, around a very slow hairpin, and then they come this very fast, what they call John Deere Hill, as you straighten up onto the start-finish line. Obviously, from my point of view, I always want to be in the car, but it was a good place to watch up in the commentary, and I think the fans really would have enjoyed that race, because it had just about everything. Simon Wills was leading and looked like he was going to run away with it, and then he had to retire, and that just threw the race wide open, and even Peter Hill was recovering well to a battle with Owen and Paul Dumbrell. But he had a spin as well, and Leroy Stevenson was very lucky to get away with a high-speed spin at about 240 kilometres an hour. He did a 360 coming onto the start-finish straight. He got away with it, and he ended up coming about seventh.
Sounds like a very exciting day. And what about for the crowd? No doubt a very good crowd on hand for this, the blue chip event for New Zealand Motorsport.
Yeah, you know, the crowd was good, and actually they filtered in after lunch quite convincingly, and the grandstands were pretty much full, and they enjoyed a great day, beautiful weather out there at Pukekohe, and I'm sure they had a good time.
It sounds like it was a great day's racing. Brenton Ramsey, for the Formula Holdens, you made a big announcement this weekend for the Australian leg of the Tasman Cup.
Sorry, say that again, Craig?
You've made a big announcement this weekend about the Australian leg of the Tasman Cup, round number three.
Round number three. You've got to put me off guard there.
Maybe it hasn't been announced this weekend, but I was led to believe that you're announcing an Australian round for the Tasman Cup Series.
Well, I'm not familiar with anything there at this stage. I know that we did try that before with the Malala leg, but I think at this stage it was a little bit difficult with the logistics. I guess we're looking now mainly to our 2001 calendar, which sees us running on 7 V8 supercar rounds and one Konica V8 round, and I think that's probably the main focus for the teams now after recovering from what's been 2 weeks of lots of action here in New Zealand.
All right, I was under the impression that we might have been getting around here of the Tasman Cup, but never mind.
No, I'm not aware of that, Christy.
All right. So for the Formula Holden drivers now, they don't get to keep them in the garage for too long, 3 months till the next run?
Yeah, that's right. They'll be putting them in the containers. They'll be heading back to Australia and then back for the opening round next year. So they've got a bit of time to get cracking, and the amount of distance that they've covered here in New Zealand is actually quite amazing. When you look at the layout of the events here, we've got 3 half-hour practice sessions plus 2 qualifying sessions, 2 races that are... one feature race, obviously, was 40 laps, so the cars have really covered a lot of ground and drivers getting some good time in the seat too, so it's pretty good from that point of view.
All right then, well, Brenton, it sounds like a very exciting 2 weekends you've enjoyed in New Zealand. I do hope that you can convince Channel 10 to bring some of that racing back home to Australia.
Yeah, well, we'll do what we can. We've spoken here with TV1, and obviously the racing here is going to go to air in TV1 next weekend. And we'll do what we can to bring it over to Australia and try and get it on so that the fans can get a bit of a glimpse of it there. But failing that, we'll probably grab some of the action and put it on the website. So if anybody wants to head across to www.formulaholden.com in the coming few weeks, I'm sure they'll be able to catch up with some of the video action there as well.
Yeah, and I would imagine the bootleg copies of the TV One program will be doing a great trade.
I imagine they would.
Brenton Ramsey, it's been a pleasure to speak to you right throughout this exciting 2000 season, and I wish you and all your family all the best for Christmas and the New Year, and I guess we'll be speaking fairly early in the New Year as things get ready for another 2001 Formula Holden season.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Craig. Thanks for having us, and we love to keep you up to date on Formula Holden, and we're really looking forward to next year too. It's an exciting round for exciting time for us, I guess, because we've got a great calendar shaping up now, and we know what it is, and we know what it is early, so we'll be putting everything in place to have a great 2001.
Yeah, and the winners over there in New Zealand, of course, in the NRC Racing Formula Holden was Andy Booth, a fellow who won both the Denny Hull Memorial Trophy and the New Zealand Grand Prix, and we're able to catch up with Andy a little bit earlier this afternoon.
At my debut, I have done a few races in Holden this year, but I mean, absolutely fantastic result. You know, the Tasman series, the whole idea of doing it was to come home after racing a lot of years in Europe and raise my profile at home, and I've certainly done that.
Well, considering your last race at Puketohe would have been in a Formula Ford, 240 kilometres an hour is quite a difference.
It's a huge difference that we were hitting close to 200 k's at the end of the straight today, so. It's a fairly exciting ride around Puketohe in a Formula Holden.
How has it struck you yet about winning firstly the Danny Holm and now the New Zealand Grand Prix?
No, I don't think it actually has. Maybe tomorrow morning when the hangover wears off, and it might all sink in.
Now, obviously, coming home, taking the ride with NRC was now a great career move.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the whole idea behind it. We had a difficult year with the races we did in Australia this year with some new cars that were struggling to get on the pace. We wanted to get a top ride for New Zealand, and NRC was the logical choice, and it's paid dividends.
For yourself, you did do a couple of years in Europe, and did you do some racing in Japan as well?
No, all my racing's been done in Europe. I did a handful of Formula Ford races in New Zealand, and then took a pretty big jump and went to Britain to race in the British Formula Ford Championship. Had a pretty successful first year there, and I followed that up with a good second year with the Swift Works team. And then I've 98 and 99, I raced in the new Formula Palmer Audi Championship there, which I think was probably a really good move as well. It just does so much for your racing. In those one-mate categories.
How was that championship? Because obviously with someone like Jonathan Palmer behind it, it would have got a fair bit of media coverage and profile.
Yeah, that was the other reason for getting involved, and it was such a high-profile championship.
And
Jonathan does a great job of promoting it. We had a fantastic package with Sky TV, and I think I learned an awful lot about racing over there with 25 identical cars. You learn that every thousandth of a second counts, and I think we're sort of starting to see the rewards from those years over there.
Well, Andy, congratulations, a fantastic start, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you on this side of the ditch for some Formula Holden races in 2001.
Well, I hope to give you something to watch.
Andy Booth's teammate in the NRC Racing team is Matthew Halliday, and Matthew joins us on the line now. Matthew, unfortunately for yourself, you didn't have the best start that you were possibly after for the Nyholm Trophy. I believe some problems on the grid for you.
Yeah, we had an engine problem, obviously, all weekend. We got better at the end, last race. Basically, the Grand Prix went, you know, we got a terrible start, worst start I've ever had in a Formula Hole, and it took a couple of laps to pass the cars that, you know, Emerson, Newton-John and Leroy Stevenson, I dropped behind at the start. It took a couple of laps to pass, and these cars, it's never easy to pass. Then the race sort of unfolded quite unusually. Simon Wills dropped out with some kind of problem, I'm not sure. The safety car came out for a spun car, and then it was basically Andy and me battling for the lead, and a couple of slower cars in between us to let Andy stretch a gap, but then I really just put my head down and started to close that gap right up, and we come up to lap a slower car, which shouldn't even be out there because he'd lost his rear wing, and they were actually black flagging him. Andy sneaked through, and I just went to follow through, and he just turned straight across the front of me, put me up on the curb, and the car swapped in, so frustrating way to end, you know, especially when the guy was just not reading the signs and should have been in the pit lane, not out on the track. But, you know, this is motor racing, so we just have to take it on the chin.
Mm. But you were putting in some fairly impressive laps in that time when you were catching up to Andy.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just giving it everything. I thought, you know, if I spin off, I spin off. You know, I saw the back of Andy's car and was just giving it everything, so.
Mm. Now, in terms of your commitments with the team, do you have anything lined up for next year with the 2001 Formula Holden Series?
Oh, definitely. We've got some good options there. But, you know, like I said, the biggest thing we're working on is the States for next year. You know, and if that doesn't happen, for sure, we'll be looking at our options in Australia, you know, and I'd love to talk also, you know, to future touring cars. I'd like to do Bathurst next year. You know, we talked to a couple of people about doing it this year, but I'd just like to do it for, you know, an event just to establish ourselves in that class, because it's a good class to come back to after you've been overseas. You know, there's definitely a few things we want to look at for next year, you know, but overall, you know, for the team was really good. You know, all the engine problems that we've had for the team to get first and second in the Tasman Cup, first and second in the New Zealand Grand Prix, they, you know, for them, they couldn't have asked for a better day. For me, it could have been slightly better, but hey, you know, it's good to finish in the top three.
Mm. Now, you mentioned you're going to try and get a run in the US. Have you got a test lined up over there?
We've already tested over there about 2 weeks ago. It went really, really well. It's just a case of building on that and letting, you know, we've got the right people working on it. It's seeing what they can come up with. You know, I've put it out of my mind for the last 2 weeks, concentrating entirely on this. So, you know, now I'm going to, obviously, tomorrow morning we'll be touching base and finding out where they are with that. But, you know, like I said, I've got the right people working on that deal. So, you know, I'm confident that if anyone's going to get something, they're going to get it for me. At the same time, like you said, you know, we're looking at our options in Australia for next year, and we hope, if nothing else happens, to be back to win the Australian Drivers Championship.
Mm. Because it's one of those things, you always got to have something as a backup in case something doesn't happen. Because the biggest problem with a lot of guys from down here is finding the money to use overseas, particularly in the US, given the current rate between the various dollars.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand especially, it's hard for Australia, but it's even harder for us here. It's just the dollars just are so different. I just got the rest of my crew dropped into the back of my car when I parked at the light, so you just have to excuse me for a minute. The really doesn't help things. But, you know, I mean, we can only do our best. You know, our sponsors had a really good run over here in the Grand Prix. Grand Prix has got a profile, and, you know, the team, you know, the one chase it down, and, you know, that was the centre point of the race, so it was really good.
Mm. Well, Matthew, congratulations on what you did achieve during the last couple of races there, and we wish you all the best for your endeavours over in the US. If you can't get there, we'll look forward to catching up with you during the 2001 Formula Holden Championship over here in Australia.
Oh, that'll be great. Well, you know, if I'm back there, I'm sure we're going to be out there to win it. You know, and hopefully, you know, we'll get back and do a touring car event or something. So, you know, I like Australia, and it's always good to come up here and race. So, you know, hopefully we'll get back there in the near future and have a bit of a run.
Okay, Matthew Halliday, thanks for joining us on Inside Motorsport.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Matthew Halliday there on the line, and what a good run. He's come back from not making a start at the trophy race with Danny Holm. He was speaking to me this morning on Sunday Morning Sports, 6 till 9, SSFM, and it was saying that really they had to find a lot more horsepower because Simon Wills was just blowing everyone to the weeds. And, well, it's a fickle game, motorsport. You can have the best car, you can be the best driver, or certainly have as much skill as everyone else, but a $2 part can really let you down.
Mm. Actually, the old story, that it can often be that, not even the 10 cent part. You know, there's been occasions I can remember going back some years ago where it was actually a incident of a manufacturer's sticker inside a distributor that came off and caused somebody to lose a race, you know, so two laps from the finish. These are the things that can happen. So motorsport is never easy, as they say.
Mm. Well, Jonathan Ledyard has been a busy man. Last weekend he was in Wales covering the final round of the championship, in that being the World Rally Championship. And here is the BBC reporter's wrap-up of that event.
Richard Burns has achieved what only two others in the 68-year history of this event have managed. But notable though that is, his hat-trick of victories is modest consolation to a man who had every reason to believe he'd become England's first World Rally Champion. Midway through the season, he was 14 points clear of Gronholm. But this result was his first victory since May, and therein lies his ultimate downfall. Gronholm snatched the initiative on the back of three wins out of six rallies and started in Wales with a 9-point advantage. He protected it impeccably. From the third stage onwards, he was never out of the top two. Burns was always on the back foot, even before he dropped to 21st because of his shunt on Friday morning. The manner of his recovery, including five stage wins, only magnified the feeling of what might have been. Instead, there's another new name on rallying's roll of honour. 32-year-old Marcus Gronholm, who wasn't even certain Persia would enter all 14 rounds this season. Now, he's a worthy world champion.
Yeah, Gronholm, the winner of the British Rally Championship, the British round of the World Rally Championship, the Network Q Rally.
You want to try again? Richard Burns.
Richard Burns won it, but Marcus Gronholm. Yeah, Marcus Gronholm won the World Rally Championship. Richard Burns was the winner. Actually, an interesting fact that it was going to be one of those sort of events where that local knowledge was going to come into play. But interesting as well that Peugeot has given Francois Delacour, who is Gronholm's teammate, the flick during the week. They're keeping Charles Panizzi, and they've just announced that they've picked up Didier Auriol from Sayat, who's going to replace Delacour. So Delacour now on the French unemployment line for World Rally Car drivers. No doubt he'll probably end up somewhere fairly soon. But apparently a bit of friction there, particularly from about the midpoint of the season between Delacour and the rest of the Peugeot team, and I'd say that's going to be one of those things to keep an eye on in the future as it heads on. But of course, things have been happening over in the UK, as people will be aware. Earlier this year, there was a lot of controversy over the terrible conditions they had at the British Grand Prix, the mud, the car parks and cars getting bogged and people not even being able to get in. Well, during the week, there has been, on Friday, an announcement about the future of the British Grand Prix, and once again we join Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC with the details on what's happening there.
The Brands Hatch circuit owned the rights to host the British Grand Prix from 2002 to 2017, but they've agreed to lease the rights to the British Racing Drivers Club, who owns Silverstone. With the details, here's our motor racing correspondent, Jonathan Ledyard.
Jackie Stewart, president of the BRDC, said the multi-million pound contract would prepare Silverstone to become the best racetrack in the world, as well as securing the future of the British Grand Prix, endangered by the fiasco last Easter. Improvements would include a new Formula One pit complex, better road access, and better parking facilities. Octagon will manage Silverstone with the BRDC, but Stewart has called on the government to follow the lead of other countries and put money into the project. The deal, spearheaded by Ron Dennis and Martin Brundle, and only signed at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, will also mean a facelift for Brands Hatch and other Octagon-owned facilities. Stewart said staging the Grand Prix at the Brands circuit would have been like trying to pour a litre into a pint pot, hence the refusal of planning permission. With Bernie Eccleston's blessing, Britain has not only kept its place on the Formula One calendar, it's also achieved it for unprecedented 15 years.
And it's interesting to note that one of the key things that is part of that deal, which was signed at 4 o'clock on the Friday afternoon, is particularly in terms of the traffic congestion and parking problems which have been at the track. Apparently they've already started work on a A43 Silverstone bypass, and car parks and circuit access are also going to be targeted. So it's good to see that at least there's some stability there, and no doubt that'll lead to better things for the British Grand Prix over time. Interesting to see that joining up of the key players in British motorsport to provide what is going to be, I think, probably the best deal for all the circuits, where they all get their fair share of the various major events. They all get an injection of funds to improve facilities, and everybody benefits because of better management for the sport. And that's always something that is good to see in relation to motorsport around the world. But in terms of other news there, what have we got else?
We should stay in Europe because Australia's Mark Webber, his career as the official test driver for the Benetton Formula One team, got off to a slow start in England overnight. But he may not have to wait long for it to take off. An injury to Benetton's Italian driver, Giancarlo Fisichella, could result in Webber being thrust into a bigger role than envisaged with the team. Fisichella could miss much of the pre-season testing because of a knee injury, which may require surgery. The Italian has carried the injury since September and has been undergoing intensive physiotherapy in Rome. Doctors will decide on December 11th whether he needs an operation, which would have to be done 2 days before Christmas. That would mean a heavier testing schedule for Webber, sharing the workload with Benetton's star recruit, 20-year-old Englishman Jenson Button. Button was the eighth in the World Championship in his rookie season with Williams, but has been lent to Benetton to make way for Indianapolis 500 winner Juan Pablo Montoya of Colombia as Ralph Schumacher's teammate next year. After the ban on F1 testing throughout November, four teams were at Silverstone in England last night to begin preparations for the opening race at Melbourne's Albert Park Raceway in early March. Rain and undisclosed problems with the new radically different Renault engine restricted Webber to just four laps. Only two teams ventured onto the track in the first 90 minutes of the session because of heavy rain. Webber spent much of the day in the garage. Benetton finally sent him out in a car fitted with the wide-angle V10 engine that marks the return of Formula One of Renault, the French car company that dominated the sport for so much of the 90s. Webber said there were a few hiccups at the Silverstone test. The weather hasn't done any favours, but that's part and parcel of Formula One off-season testing in Europe, Webber said. The rain really limited how much work we were going to get done today, and we had a little bit of a problem with the car when we did get it out on the track. That's life, and there's going to be a lot of things to overcome in developing a car that will be competitive by the time the season starts in Melbourne in March. Apart from having a new chassis that will come along soon after Christmas and the new Renault engine, there is also a lot of work to do with Michelin, who will be our tyre supplier and will be coming back into Formula One to take on Bridgestone. Webber from Canberra won the race for Benetton's testing role after trials with the team in France and Portugal in August and September. He also impressed with his third place in his rookie season at the International Formula 3000 Championships, including victory in the British round at only his second start. Renault's supplier of motors, which you will no doubt remember, powered Nigel Mansell, Alain Prost, Damon Hill, Jacques Villeneuve, all to world titles with Williams, as well as Michael Schumacher's second title with Benetton in 1995.
Yeah, it's interesting there that Mark Webber has actually sort of finally got that chance, and you know, there's probably a lot of people out there with their Fisichella dolls sticking pins in knees, I'm sure, to try and help Mark get into that Formula One driving position. Of course, the interesting part is that Michelin has returned to Formula One, and it'll be interesting to see.
I can't wait for the coloured tyres.
Well, that's it. They've already apparently had on a couple of display cars around the place coloured tyres to match the livery of the cars. It's something they're saying they can do. Apparently has no effect on the actual rubber itself.
Well, rubber tyres are only black because they put black dye in it.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, you know. Shall we see Ferraris with scarlet tyres, Jordans with yellow tyres, Williams with blue and white tyres maybe, you know? Of course, that's interesting to see how things are going there. And, of course, with Montoya coming into Formula 1, of course, we've got to remember the man who was last in Formula 1 from kart, which was Alex Zanardi, and during the week the announcement has come through that Alex Zanardi has signed or has made a deal with Mo Nunn Racing, the double kart champion who won his titles under the engineering expertise of Nunn at Ganassi Racing. Still has to sign contracts, but team owner Mo Nunn is happy that it will now go ahead. Alex has agreed, we've agreed, so I don't see any problems, said Nunn. But until it is firmly signed, I don't believe it. I'm really excited about it, he continued. We'll get a bit of life back into him, and it should be okay. Monon Racing will move into a new factory at Indianapolis as it expands into a two-car team. Zanardi will drive a Honda-powered Renault alongside the team's existing driver, Tony Kanaan. Jimmy Vassar, who had been close to taking the second seat at No Nun's team, is now working hard on finalising a deal at Patrick Racing to replace Adrian Fernandez. Teammate of Pat Patrick and general manager Jim McGee met yesterday at Patrick's winter home in Phoenix, and both expect the deal to happen.
Well, of course, Mark Webber was one of the new kids on the block that had an opportunity to attend the AIS, of course, the Elite Driver Training Program, and this year it also included the Marsh Insurance Brokerage Driver Training Competition for the young drivers, and quite a deal of young drivers are out and about trying to make their way to the elite levels of motorsport. I had an opportunity to go out there and, well, you can almost say, see who wants to be a motor racing star. This week, the Marsh talented drivers made their visit to the Australian Institute of Sport. And on Wednesday, Chris Edwards from the Confederation of Australian Motorsport introduced the future superstars to the assembled media.
It involves six drivers coming together from across the country. Selected by various states to represent that state. Barton Moore from New South Wales, Will Power from Queensland, Richard Chamberlain from Victoria, Bradley Chicks from Tasmania, Sam Brand from South Australia, and Tony Riccadello from Western Australia. The drivers undergo a comprehensive training program for 2.5 days at the Institute, after which two drivers will today be selected as the lucky winners of the ongoing sponsorship for the Marsh Talented Drivers sponsorship. The sponsorship awarded today will be to the value of $4,500 each. The winners of the Talented Drivers Camp sponsorship are Samuel Brand and Barton Moore.
Barton Moore, who's from New South Wales and competing in the Australian Formula Ford Championship, explained his introduction to motorsport.
A lot of people in motorsport. My father has been involved with many years building cars and all that, and I just grew up around it, and I couldn't really help myself. I got involved, got my hands dirty, and basically from there on I can't get out.
Started off in the karting room?
Yeah. I raced go-karts for four or five years, and that was really good. Good place to start, learn the racecraft, and I had to work on the go-karts myself, and so that enabled me to learn the cars, the mechanics of it and all that, which I quite enjoy, and I think it helps me have a little advantage sometimes over the other competitors. I've been privileged enough to get a new car for next year, 2001 Van Diemen, and I'll be running that next year in the National Formula Ford Championship.
Mm-hmm.
The go-karts, the racing is very, very hard, but as I stepped in the Formula Ford, anything a lot quicker, your concentration has to be a lot higher. I noticed physically I have to be a lot fitter, and that's where coming to the AIS here for the Marsh School has really helped me to fine tune in that area.
Sam Brand from South Australia is hoping the growth in rallying will continue to allow him a prosperous career.
The main thing that rallying is really coming out of the forest, and while there's still a way to go, I think the publicity that we've been getting and the quality of the drivers and the cars has always been there. The matter of bringing it to the public, and I think people are starting to realise it's one of the most exciting motorsports around, and I think that's going to be really good. Literally, I've got a really vivid memory when I was a kid of sitting and being dragged out of the forest and sitting rugged up in a tarp hole and hearing the cars coming from miles away, and that split second in the middle of the night you can see the driver and co-driver in front of you and they tear off down the scrub, and I've wanted to do it ever since. My family's been behind me, and I'm really lucky. I've got some good sponsorship support last year, and now I'm doing the Australian Championship. It's it's still been exciting. I think rallying, you know, that it's really been getting a bit more focused of late, and especially that we are actually athletes. A lot of people ask me, what are you doing going to the Institute of Sport? But we are athletes, and while our needs are different than some of the others, I think learning more about it is going to give us a lot bigger advantage compared to other drivers, and I'm really happy to be picked down into a one. It's just amazing. Yeah. $4,500 in the right direction, that's for sure.
The future is soon here, and you can see these stars of tomorrow today at a track or forest near you. Joins us on the line, and John, the World Series sprint cars roll on, and an exciting season, probably the likes of which we haven't seen in a long, long time.
It was a really good night at Riverview Speedway in Murray Bridge, Craig. We had new 1, 6, 10 and 30 lap race records. So the racing was really red hot, and all over at 9:57 p.m. 30 lap non-stop feature. It was just a really good night for the crowd that attended.
It has been an exciting championship so far, getting off on the East Coast rather than the West Coast this year, and certainly going from strength to strength with C7's coverage. It's making it even bigger, and of course Speed Week once again showing some races.
That's correct, and last night we had a very much a novelty. In fact, we had one of the Clipsal super screens on view in Turn 3 of the Speedway, the ginormous screen that normally can be seen at sporting events around the country, had a live feed from camera positions, and really added to the experience last night.
And the championship so far, the crowds have certainly been swelling to each event.
Well, it's a really competitive event this year because we do have three triple World Series champions all vying to become the first four-time winner. And last night we saw Brooke Tatnall have a really, really red-hot go and win the feature race. He and local Phil March, who was High Points and the Dash winner, each had one jump start. And they were very, very keen to get going. In the third attempt to get underway, they were just both flat out into the first corner, trying to be the first one there. Brooke, from the outside position, managed to run around the outside, and it was a really, really good race.
Is everyone out there going for the sheep stations, and that always makes for a very attractive race as well.
That's correct. Brooke has virtually said that Donnie Schatz and Skip Jackson before him had raised the bar in terms of professionalism, preparation, etc., and that was never more evident than last night. We actually had Max Dumsey in a really fierce duel over third place, finally prevailing against local Mark Reuter, the South Australian, who's just acquired a new Maxim, and they were swapping places backwards and forwards for third, so that kept the crowd really and truly entertained.
At the points, how do they line up?
Well, we've had one round at Newcastle, one washed out at Parramatta, and the third round at Murray Bridge. So this is round four, and it is actually a double header, which will be running at Friday and Saturday night at Avalon International Raceway near Geelong. And there's something like $50,000 in prize money up for this meeting alone. So that should guarantee the intentions of all those coming to vie for such a healthy prize purse.
Now, Avalon, for people who don't know, it is one of the toughest circuits on the agenda, because the marbles on the second line become quite treacherous, and it's always an advantage to get the Oval Express Quick Time Award.
That's true. It's a very, very tricky place to get around. In fact, Brooke Tatnall held an outstanding record there at one stage, where he'd won five eight feature wins in a row from World Series competition. But that's not to discount the likes of Max Dumsey, who've raced there many times before. But he's been winning regularly each time he appears up in New South Wales at Parramatta. So that's where he's been reporting his prior to the World Series starting. And we've also been joined after Christmas. We've been a whole lot more drivers intend being regulars on the World Series show. So we should look forward to that, particularly after Christmas as well.
Well, I mentioned the Oval Express Quick Time Award, and of course Oval Express is about ready to hit the newsstands once again with certainly everything you could want to know about speedway racing in Australia.
Well, we've been exceptionally thrilled with the reaction and response to the first issue of Oval Express, and the next one is due on the newsstands on Wednesday, and it really does feature a fantastic story about Shane Crickey, who is the car owner for Skip Jackson, and Shane's fight against cancer is just an unbelievably courageous tale of someone who's fought against all obstacles to try and overcome this disease, and I think anybody who reads it will have a far better appreciation for the type of person that Shane has become as a result of this serious illness.
Yeah, it is a tough one to come back from, but as we have seen with science and medical science these days, a lot of good stuff is happening in research towards that disease in particular.
Yeah, and Oval Express this month also has got a huge technical feature about inside the the motor of former Australian Superstand champion Peter Logue. It's actually running some Wayne Gardner cylinder heads on carburetor and a methanol mixture, which is totally different from what you would normally have seen in a V8 supercar. So it's a really good story, as is our feature two on the young guns, sons of guns like Gary Rush Jr., Brooke Tatnall, Todd Wanless, Tim McCubbin, all sons of former champions.
Mm. And one thing I must say about the technical features, they're one of the best technical writers in the country you have doing them for you with Tony Glynn.
Yeah, we've been exceptionally thrilled to have Tony come on board the Express, because when we originally looked at this, we wanted to make sure that we got someone of highest quality to come and write our technical stories, and we're really thrilled that Tony can do that and make such a good fist of it.
Well, it sounds like Oval Express, one not to miss, and if you are so inclined, pick it up and then perhaps get someone else to do the driving down to Avalon next weekend.
That sounds like the perfect scenario.
It has been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I look forward to speaking to you after the double header at Avalon. Thanks very much, John Evans.
Yes, my pleasure, Craig.
Yeah, and over in the UK, arrangements for next year's British Touring Car Championship are proceeding. Interesting enough, retiring superbike ace Carl Fogarty, he's been having a couple of test runs in a super production Alfa Romeo 156 run by the JS Motorsport team. He had a run the other week with them at Donington, and there's no word yet that if he'll make the jump from two wheels onto four, but given the competitive person he is, I suppose he wants to make the best of it. As well, the announcement during the week that Edenbridge Racing in the UK, they've sealed a deal to run BMW 320i E36s in the production, super-production car class. They'd actually been over to Macau to see the cars that are being run there, which had been prepared by Italian BMW experts, Team Raffinelli, and the engines there also being built by Carli Motorsport, a Dutch team, which who took Patrick Huisman to success at the Macau Gear. So they'll be getting themselves up and running. They'd actually been looking at running possibly Vauxhalls in the new touring class, but they believe that the super production category is going to have just as much fun and just as many fireworks. Also interesting during the week, the word that they've got potentially Peugeot and the like are going to be running both in the production car class and the touring car outright class. Possibly BMW may be doing the same. And last word is that in the production car class, that Lexus look to be one of the runners who are going to come in there with the LS200 model. So if that happens, it's going to really open it up with a lot of major manufacturers and cars drivers competing in the British Touring Car Championship next year. Of course, there was a bit of controversy about the British Touring Car drivers who were running at Bathurst, and of course they've put their own response back, and apparently, according to the latest of the motoring rags, they've all been invited back to compete in the long distance races next year, and I think we'll see how that all works out. But anyhow, Chris Economaki, who's one of the leading commentators in motorsport in the world and the USA, has been over to Bathurst a number of times. That's the link there, as they say. He actually commentated a couple of times. He had a talk to Craig at Charlottesville about the numbers of classes and divisions available for fans in the USA.
There are many, many different types of cars. Like here at the Lowe's Motor Speedway dirt track, there's sprint cars with wings, and then in between are the small duplicates of former racing cars called the Legends cars. And across the street, a quarter of a mile away, tomorrow there'll be late model sportsman cars, they're called, in the Busch Grand National Series, and then in a day after that, the Winston Cup cars. So fans that are here this weekend have an opportunity to see Winston Cup cars, Busch Grand National cars, the ARCA cars last Wednesday, and the sprint cars and the Legends cars. And if they want to go 5 or 6 miles to the Concord Motor Speedway tomorrow night, they can see a different type of racing stock car.
How much has motor racing changed over your years at the helm of National Speedsport News?
Oh, remarkable changes. Indescribable changes. First of all, the multiplicity of classes. Years ago, there were racing cars in the beginning, a single-seat pointed-tail car with open wheels. And then the midget came along. And, of course, that was the biggest positive happening in American automobile racing, was the advent of the midget racing car. And the reason for that was that until it came along in 1934, all races were on big tracks out of town and at fairgrounds. You had to make plans to spend a day at the races. And when the midget came into being, every baseball stadium and high school track and so forth had the potential to becoming an auto speedway, and thousands did. And a man could come home from work on a Friday night, have dinner with his family, and go downtown and see the midget races and come home at a decent hour. And what the midget did was bring racing to the public. The public didn't have to go to the races. And that created thousands and thousands of fans in this country that and their children and the children's children still follow the sport.
What would you think would have been the next big step? Would lighting the tracks, or where was the next big leap, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. What America wants, unlike the Formula One series, they want passing. They want competition. They want a, racing is passing, not following. And in this country, spirited competition will sell the sport. Image, of course, is important, but the actual competition where driver A races driver B and passes him, and then driver B repasses him, that's what keeps the people buying tickets and coming back. And it doesn't matter what kind of car they're in.
You've enjoyed yourself a number of times in Australia?
Yeah, many times I've been. I was the announcer for the 7 Network many years ago on that event. It's a wonderful event. And I've been to the Grand Prix in Adelaide, and I've been to the Calder Motordrome in Melbourne. I've had a lot of visits to your lovely country.
What have you seen over the years going on there that you might see?
I saw some midget events on little tracks. The thing that amazed me the most is the cars go the other way. It's hard for an American to see cars turning right on an oval. And some of your stock car races I saw in Adelaide were like that, you know.
The onset of dirt tracks like Bruce Smith's been bringing to us.
Well, I think what this track here and the sister track in Fort Worth, Texas, and another one in Las Vegas does is expose this form of racing, open-wheel sprint car racing, to the stock car fan who had not seen it before. And it would become a converter, you know. It would be a new and different religion for them, you know.
And they do follow NASCAR racing like a religion. Chris Economaki there, and a very interesting man. I hope you've enjoyed both those chats we've had with him, because in every magazine that is published about motorsport, when they list the things that you must do if you're a motorsport fan, without fail, in a top 10 list of things that motorsport fans must do is read the editor's comments in National Speed Sport News. Doesn't matter whether it's in Oval Track, Circle Track, Dick Berggren's magazines, they all say Chris Economaki's editor's column is the number one thing that you should read, and then pick up their magazine, they're basically saying.
Yeah, well, he's a man who's been around a long time in motorsport and always has lots of things he's got organised, and he's been around everywhere. He's been to places like Le Mans, he's been to Formula One races, he's been out here to Bathurst, naturally enough. He used to hang around with Alan Moffat, so both their pronunciations of Bathurst was this Bathurst sort of version thereof. Interesting enough, this week there's been a fair bit of coverage going on as well in the lead up to the American Le Mans Series race in Adelaide at the end of the year. We've got the word that to the Audi team, they're all coming out with all their cars and drivers, so that's going to be very, very worthwhile for people who want to go down and see that race, because they're the guys who have been dominating both at Le Mans and in other races during the season. There's going to be quite a few other different teams and cars coming up. Of course, there's the brand new Panos car that is going to be run there by Jan Magnussen and Australia's own Jeff Brabham. David Brabham. I keep getting all these Brabham brothers mixed up here. And no doubt we'll probably see a few other Australians trying to get themselves into the arrangements for that race before the end of the year. And a driver has actually been running in the GDP Nations Cup. He'll be running in one of the support races for the American Le Mans Series race down in Adelaide. Also probably trying to get himself a drive in one of the cars there is Paul Stokel, and Craig had a chance to speak to him this week.
A fair amount of prestige with it and that kind of thing, and it's been good for my reputation, I guess, as a driver. The car's certainly been fast enough, but we've had some mechanical reliability, which has cost us points throughout the year, and unfortunately we ended up fourth in the championship, where we probably should have been winning, but good old Jim Richards, consistency paid off and he beat us in the end.
You have had a lot of open wheel experience with the Formula Holdens and so on. How much difference is it to go to a full body car from what you've been driving with the open wheels?
Yeah, it's not that hard. In fact, it's probably an easier thing to do to go from an open wheeler back to a touring car type style of car. The Lambo is a fairly nice thing to drive. You know, it's one of the easiest cars I've actually ever had to drive. It's got a lot of power and it's got a lot of grip with its tyre width, compared to a Formula Holden, which is where I've come from in the past, which is, you know, hang on to grim death and the thing's corner at 3.5 G's. They're a pretty amazing car, but that's a good step. You know, my aim is to get into V8 supercars here in Australia, and the Nations Cup is a good grounding for it.
Other sedan racing experience, had you had any before you jumped into the Lamborghini?
Yeah, I ran a Lotus Elise in GT production in 98, and other than that, I've done Targa a couple of years and a Lotus Elise as well. Changed allegiance to Lamborghini, obviously, but before that, I drove for Toyota years ago in a small car class at Bathurst. That was really my only other experience.
How much support can Lamborghini give a racing team like you have got set up?
Yeah, well, in Australia, I'm fairly lucky because the people we drive for are actually the importers of Lamborghini to Australia, so it's a sort of a semi-factory team. We get some support from the factory in that they maybe supply a car. But that's really as far as it goes. The rest has got to be commercially driven, sponsorship wise, so that's a big factor to how we go.
And obviously getting into the V8 supercars as a goal, how has the progression been going?
Yeah, good. I ran with Steve Nellery this year at Bathurst, and we had a car capable of doing the job up there. It was a real pity when we had to retire due to overheating problems, but you know, Steve made a mistake in some fairly difficult conditions at the beginning of the race, which probably cost us fairly dearly, but up until that stage he was fastest on the track and I was looking forward to a good stint, but in the end only got 10 laps. In the past I've run with Wayne Gardner up there in the Coke Commodore and we had some unluck there as well, so some bad luck there, so hoping maybe all these drives will eventually lead to a full time gig.
And 2001 planned?
2001 we've got a new Lamborghini on the way, a GTR, which is a replacement for the SVR we've been running, a little bit more power, better handling package, and we're hoping we can take the championship out this in 2001.
All right, well, we wish you all the best for that, and we look forward to seeing you back here in Canberra for the GMC 500.
I look forward to it. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and, you know, Paul Sakella, I've seen him around for a while. He's been one of those drivers that keeps on popping up in different class cars, and that Lamborghini Diablo, I must admit, very beast of a vehicle, and one that takes a fair bit of handling, particularly as it was up in the wet there at Bathurst. As he said, reliability was the winner there, with Jim Richards being the man to beat in that championship. Well, another driver who was in Canberra during the last week for the Elite Driver Program was Rick Kelly from the Formula Ford Championship. He has also stepped into the Peter Hills Formula Holden last week in New Zealand, and certainly one of those drivers who is somebody to keep an eye on, and actually looking at the results from the New Zealand Grand Prix the other weekend, I don't think he did too badly for himself. So, I mean, look, he finished third in race one in the Tasman New Zealand Grand Prix series, and third in race two, so not doing too badly. As it was, Craig had a chance to have a chat to him at the driver program.
It was great, actually. It was a surprise. We were only notified a week before the race, so Peter Hill from M111 notified me a week before that he wasn't able to make it, and I drove his car. The transition to the car was very, very difficult with the downforce of the car. It's hard to understand how it works and that sort of thing, but it was a great experience and had a lot of fun.
Obviously something you're looking forward to pursuing?
Yeah, I'd really like to get into the Formula Holden category next year or the year after if we get the budget to do it.
And for yourself, your progression through motorsport to get to where you are now, how did it all start off?
I actually followed my brother into go-karts, and he took the next step up to Formula Ford, and I always liked to see him do well and always wanted to do well myself, so we took it from go-karts to Formula Ford for this year, and went very well, and we hope to take it to Formula Holden next year or the year after.
And with the experience already so far through the Formula Ford and the Formula Holden, is open wheels where you want to push through to, or do you eventually want to become a tin top driver?
No, I do prefer the open wheelers. They're purpose built, whereas tin tops are more transformed from a road car. So I'd obviously prefer to go overseas and pursue open wheelers if the opportunity arises.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best for 2001 and we'll keep an eye on your progress throughout the season.
All right, thanks a lot.
Taking part in the Elite Driver Program is Neil McFadden. He's one of Australia's leading young carters, and this year he took out the Formula A CIK FIM Championship in Australia. And I suppose this is the thing, these karting guys looking like James Courtney and the like, this is where a lot of the drivers come from. But anyhow, Neil McFadden, he's one of the people we had a chance to talk to this week.
But 3 years ago I started in FMK, which is the really top level, and yeah, I've been going well in that, so that's great.
You have regularly polled in the Cardos top 50 drivers. What is your procedure now? Where do you want to head off to? Formula Ford next year? Or?
Yeah, for sure, that's what I want to be looking at. But if not, you know, I wouldn't mind doing karts overseas. Like a lot of other drivers have done that and they've gone really well and got into open wheel formulas later on in the track, like in England or something like that. That's what I'll be looking for.
Now, how old are you at the moment?
I'm 17 at the moment.
So, just finished schooling?
Yeah, I finished in year 10 and I'm doing a fitting and machining apprenticeship on the second year now.
Alright, so you've really got 2 years before you make a move overseas, or you drop the apprenticeship?
Yeah, I can put it on hold, like, you know, it's something to give me a good mechanical background, but it's something you can put on hold and you can start it back up. So, yeah.
And with those plans, obviously, you look at the people like Caruso and Courtney who have all gone before you, and that is obviously people who you want to emulate?
Oh, yeah, definitely, but yeah, I want to be able to do that.
But who were your heroes? Who drew you in motorsport?
Oh, firstly, my father, who used to race, and, you know, a lot of the Formula One blokes like Ayrton Senna, like, that's what I really want to be.
And when you come to a camp like set up at the AAS for the Elite Drivers, what do you gain from being able to speak to drivers with slightly more experience? And
yeah, you can speak to blokes with more experience and experience in other fields. Like, there's a lot of blokes here from rallying, Formula Holden, Formula Ford. It gives you a bit of a broad spectrum of motorsport, so it's good.
Do you have any ambitions to go that way, or right now you're just thinking karts international? And
no, definitely I want to go to open wheel formula. That's my next step that I really want to make.
And have you got a timeline? Do you say in 5 years I want to be somewhere?
Oh, for sure, yeah. You've got a goal to work to. Putting a time limit on it is something that's a bit hard to do, but yeah, you work to the goal and whatever comes off for you, you make it happen.
So immediately for 2001, what are your plans?
At the moment, we're unsure. We're about to go down to a Ford Motor Company-supported Formula Ford test where they'll be selecting one of the five drivers. So I could be in there, or I've also looked. I've had a test of Fastlane Formula Ford. Had a look there also, and really I'm just unsure at the moment.
The cost of racing in the professional car series, though, it's not a great league to start for Formula Ford when you look at it.
Oh, a lot of people spend a lot of money in karts. We've sort of ran on fairly much a shoestring budget, so it is still a big jump. Like, we've done a lot of the stuff ourselves, so still a fairly big jump.
Well, Neil, congratulations on a great season, and we'll keep an eye on how you progress through 2001.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Nintendo, an interesting year 2000 for yourself.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the lights very much this year. It's been a great championship. Learned a lot about the cars, learned how to drive them, and yeah, it's definitely the way to go to start your career in V8.
How was running in the GTP series a training ground for you?
GTP was mainly just sort of starting getting familiar with saloon cars and just, you know, the other surroundings of the other cars around you, but I took that avenue instead of Formula Ford, just found it more applicable to me. So,
anyway. You also were able to get a few memorable events under your belt, which got you a lot of media coverage early in your career too, which probably didn't hurt.
No, any coverage is good coverage, but yeah, the Maserati was an exciting drive, and the drive with FTR was another one. Unfortunately, didn't get to do much with them, but that's the way it goes. But yeah, no, I've enjoyed myself a lot.
Obviously, next year you'd be, well, it was announced this week that you're stepping up to a full V8 series. How much is that going to change the way the team works and the way that you're going to have to prepare yourself for 2001?
Oh, we're just going to be a lot busier, spend a lot more money. But, you know, the guys, they all do a great job. They all enjoy themselves. Just going to have to be a little bit more disciplined in making sure everything's fine. But, I mean, we finished every race this year, so the guys the guys definitely did a good job in preparing the car. So, you know, it's going to be another year of learning, and we don't expect to win, but we expect to do well with the car we've got. And, you know, we've proved that at Bathurst we did very, very good times, and, you know, we're happy with the package we've got.
For your setup, what sort of car will you be using? Because I think you had the Ford, the BMC software car, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've got that again, BMC with us again next year. So we've got a new AU we bought off 4Wheel. It's a year old, and, you know, it's just that little bit better than the EL, and it's a lot nicer to drive and get the power down a little bit better. And, yeah, I'm just getting used to it at the moment, but finding it a lot nicer.
So you've already had some time to...
Yeah, well, we use that car at Bathurst, so, you know, just settling down in the car and finding out what changes make the car do what is just what we're on about at the moment, so, you know.
Does it seem like a long way off the start of the season to you now, or are you going, my God, we've got so much to do and so little time to do it in?
Well, there's never enough time. It's in March that we start again, but it seems like 3 months away, but it sort of will come around really quick. There's always something to do, and you always find something somewhere.
Who was your heroes when you were driving, when you were growing up and wanting to become a racing driver?
Oh, Ayrton Senna in Formula One. He was always my hero. As you can see by my helmet, it's pretty much the same as what he's got, just in reverse. But, you know, he was always great driving the wet, no matter what car he had, and he always pushed everything to the limit. So, yeah, he was my hero.
Your decision to go saloon cars over open wheelers, is that because you wanted to be a saloon car driver, or is that just the Australian market thing?
Well, that's the only way you can go in Australia, and we didn't have the finances or know the people that we had to know to sort of go overseas or anything like that. And, you know, just the way it's panned out that we've started into V8s this year.
Well, we wish all the best for 2001, and we can keep an eye on the blue Ford.
Yep.
As it charges through the pack.
No worries.
Yeah, and last night the V8 supercar drivers and teams, they had their awards night, I think it was down in Adelaide, and at that particular event, Matthew White, who's been running in the Light Series in, I think, the team combined with Terry Wyhoon, he was named as the Rookie of the Year for the V8 Supercar Series, and apparently there's a decision that even had the people from IMG surprised. So interesting to see how things turn out there. Actually, be good to hear some of the other results from that particular award ceremony.
Mark Stack won.
Oh, well, yeah. What else? Anybody else want anything else of interest?
700 people, and if you care to stay up after sports tonight on Channel 10, they have, I think, an hour of highlights from the awards banquet.
Boy, that's going to be late tonight, certainly. Anyhow, next weekend, motorsport-wise, we've got the Super Tourers down at Simmons Plains. Hopefully also during the week we'll try and catch up with Paul Pickett, who's the man who's behind the Daewoo series, because they've announced a 500-kilometre mini enduro using the Daewoo Kumo Cup cars at Wakefield Park on the Australia Day long weekend, which is the weekend when the Super Tour is going to be back at
just
Wakefield
as well,
Park.
It might take the 3 days to get 500 k's out of them.
given they actually do fairly well. It costs $9,900.
So currently, Colin Ford, Peter Norton, Craig Revelle are looking for sponsors to render that event.
Yeah, we've got a yellow car. We could put the blue Triple S markings on it. Anybody else out there? Yep.
See, if it was a Hyundai series, we'd have one already. Oh, Peter owns one.
A different model of car. Damn. But anyhow, that's going to be something. We'll try and catch up with him, because that's actually, as they say, it's designed for people who want to go out and have fun. And, you know, so as they say, it's endurance racing for the masses and a bit of fun, I suppose, for people. I think that possibly that could be the last run for those cars. I think he's got something else, obviously, for a one-make series next year that's a little bit more horsepower and fun. So we might even have a chance to have a chat to him about that. So, yeah, that's where we're heading next week. As I say, we'll be going to Tasmania, because then we've got Kwinana opening for the new Motorplex over there, and a few other things on the go as well. So from all of us here at this week at Inside Motorsport, good evening, and we'll catch you next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via ComradeSat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Did you know the Western Dixon and Canberra Centre ACTABs are all open to